Okay, it's for the next talk, let's welcome Brandon Liu, who's going to be discussing moving proto maps from open core to open source.
All right, awesome. Thanks. So hi, everyone. I'm Brandon. I'm talking about my projects that are called ProtoMaps and PM Tiles. And the journey I've had building this open source project and business over the past few years. And to give some context into what this talk is about and how it relates to open source, I want to know if anyone has noticed a trend in open source projects in the past couple of years. If you've used a couple of big projects like Terraform or Elastic, you might have heard that a lot of these projects are relicensing. And for example, the projects on the left, they changed the business source license. The projects on the right, they changed the server-side public license. And these are generally considered source available licenses. They can argue about the definition of open source. But the fundamental issue is that these licenses, they restrict what you can do with the software. For example, you cannot run a business that competes with the authors of the software using that project. And in fact, this is not a recent thing. If you have been following software in web mapping over the past few years, basically the past decade, there's projects like CardoDB, like MapBoxGL, like TileMill, MapZen, CloudMade. And almost all of these projects were popular for a while. And they all seem to have either become defunct, unmaintained, or pivoted to a different business that is not web mapping related, or they have relicensed like those other projects. And my goal in explaining this is to show that these are really the same thing. There is some phenomenon going on in the industry beyond just geo. In open source in general, and open source in geo is no exception. And the fundamental phenomenon behind all this is the relationship between open source software and software as a service. And I call FOSS the best collaboration model for developing software. I don't think I need to convince people at this conference about that. But I'm also going to try to convince you that SaaS is the best business model for selling software. And one thing that comes up is like, okay, so why do people make SaaS products? Is it because the owners are really greedy or exploitative? And I think like it's valuable to dig more into the exact reasons why SaaS is so good and why it has come to dominate the software industry for like 20 years. So there's a couple of core reasons that are not just related to money. I mean, they have to do with business, but they're not just about making a lot of money as to why SaaS is so good. And these are adoption, these are DRM, and these are price discrimination. So the first reason why SaaS is great is it is amazing for adoption. You do not need to install anything to use the software. You have no issue where it's like, oh, okay, like it doesn't work on my machine. I'm on a different operating system. Maybe there's some small browser issues, but those are generally manageable. And in order to start using the software, it is instant. There's literally a big call to action on the landing page that says, sign up now, get started for free. You can deal with the payment part later. So SaaS is amazing for adoption. SaaS implicitly has some DRM or digital rights management. So, you know, back in the day, there was a lot of controversy about how DVDs and music could be ripped. You could share them on Napster. Well, open source software is the same. So by introducing SaaS or like an API where you need some kind of key to access it, then it means your customers don't have access to your source code. And I mean, it's very useful. Like it means that access can be metered based on how much you use. And if they stop paying, you can also get them to, you're able to terminate their access to the software, which you cannot do with software that is, you know, just like, you know, like a command line tool like GDAL or something. And the third really important reason is price discrimination. And this basically means that the more willingness that someone has to pay, whether it's a company or whether it's, you know, a huge corporation, if they're more willing and able to pay, then they're going to pay more. If their capability is less, you can still be able to charge them some amount of money, but it's like a different tier. So SaaS is amazing for price discrimination, because when you start out, like you're a hobbyist, you're playing with the software, they can use it for free. And as they grow, they pay a little bit more, they're on like a small business plan. And then once they succeed, once they're huge, then they're on an enterprise plan. So this is great, because when your customers succeed, then you also succeed. So how do you build SaaS? That SaaS probably incorporates open source software. Well, why not? So we have this dilemma. Some people say it's like a moral one. It's about, you know, doing the right thing for open source software. On one hand, you could invest in building your own SaaS, or you can invest in building your own FOSS. You can spend years investing in a FOSS project. Or you can just sell some random stuff on GitHub that you found. So, you know, which one are people going to choose? And obviously, like, people are going to choose to sell things that they did not create. It's just more efficient. It's just good business. Like, it's basically a kind of non-amended here syndrome, where it's like, it's inefficient to reproduce the work that already exists. So why not just sell open source software? So another way of putting this is that if you have two SaaS companies and one of them spends 70% of their budget just developing open source and 30% on marketing. Now, there's another company that sells this, competing products. They use A's open source software. They contribute, you know, they're good citizens. They contribute 30% of their time to developing that software, but they spend 70% of their budget on marketing. Well, which company is going to be more successful? And it is almost always going to be the second company. So the point here is that there is an economic term for this, which is rent seeking. And my opinion is that this is a structural feature of this combination of SaaS and FOSS. The analogy is like there's a river there's a river where goods are transported, and a feudal lord, he installs a chain across the river and says, in order to pass this chain, you have to pay me money. So that's kind of it's a useful analogy for how you to think about like the relationship between SaaS and open source software. If open source software is free, then SaaS is a really good way to turn that into a paying product. So I guess maybe this is the end, or just open source with business source license that protects you from this kind of phenomenon. Maybe like it's just the end of open source. Like, we don't need to have this conference anymore. Like, we can all just go on vacation next year instead of, you know, coming to the conference for work. Everything is just business source license instead of open source. But I have at least 10 more minutes to talk, so I'll continue to talk about things. Okay, so anyways, what is Protomaps? So Protomaps is a free and open source map of the world. And it is also a vector tiling system that is based on an open format called PM Tiles and deployed on static storage. And the purpose of Protomaps is to enable a huge open ecosystem. So Chris mentioned it in a few slides in his keynote. It is compatible with a new platform called Source Co-op, and a company called Felt uses it as part of their infrastructure. There's a bunch of public sector use cases powering weather apps, powering newspaper websites like the Washington Post. In the public sector, the government in the UK, there is this really nice app I found yesterday about wildfires in BC. And these are all using the PM Tiles format. And one goal of Protomaps, which is a commercial business that is developing open source software, is to make it sustainable. And we often hear the word sustainable, but what does sustainable actually mean? Well, I think what it really means is the opportunity cost for developers. If you're a programmer, you can probably go make X amount of money writing React apps for a big company. So why would you bother building open source software instead? And in my opinion, we should find a way to make building open source software that is free and open source actually competitive with these kinds of commercial jobs. And sustainability has different meanings also. Like one definition of sustainability might be it's just your nights and weekends project. It's not your full-time job. You are paid a salary to work on a different, completely different thing. You work on this in your free time. And that's not really a problem. But I think that the problem that Protomaps is addressing, it deserves a full-time job. There's other ways to sustain open source, which is like a big company just pays you to work on it, and that generally works for existing software. It's difficult to make a software from scratch to convince a huge company to develop this thing from scratch without any guarantee. And there's also definitions of sustainable, which means like I have some venture capital backed company and I need to make those investors whole. I need a big business model that can make investors happy, you know, give them a return. And that's generally what I'm not talking about here. So Protomaps is an independent company. I'm the only employee. I'm focused on what is the model that can find a full-time employment from this open source software. And really what the goal is and why I am comparing Protomaps versus a SaaS product is to find use cases that are underserved by existing map technology. That could be you're using the map offline, the pricing model doesn't work for you. You are using it on an airplane. That's a big one. You need to customize the data. You need to show the data. You need to be free of any third-party vendor. You have your own data. You want to host it yourself. All that, I think, deserves a great ecosystem for a great ecosystem for hosting web maps, and that just does not exist right now. And one other thing I want to mention is people ask me, is this a self-hosted system? And I've started to stop using this word because I think self-hosted is sort of like, it's sort of like meatless sausage. It's only defined in what it isn't. So there's self-hosted software, and it involves, you know, setting up servers. It involves maybe paying someone to maintain it. And then there's a hosted API where you can just pay, you know, a vendor for a subscription and they run it for you. And in general, the behavior of companies is they will always go for the hosted service. So why even bother having a self-hosted thing? And this kind of relates to the SaaS problem, which is that even if you have an open source projects with a SaaS component, well, like I was saying with adoption, you start out, you have an open source product, you have a hosted version, they use it for free, they grow, and then once they're big enough, they actually just migrate totally off your platform. They were paying you, you know, like $500 a month, now they're paying you zero. So the incentive trap around self-hosted software is that you have to make that software as hard to deploy as possible. There's no incentive to make the open source software really easy to deploy. So what I've taken to in Protomaps is something called the Tolstoy principle. In Anna Karenina, Tolstoy says, all happy families are alike. Each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. And I think he was really talking about like DevOps too, in that like, well, part of the hard part about self-hosting is there's a million different ways to configure, you know, servers and HTTP and proxies and stuff. Well, for Protomaps, the approach is that there's only one way to do things. There's a very constrained number of ways to deploy it, and that makes it really easy to run yourself. And that is the market difference from having some complicated system that is really hard for people to run and having the opportunity to just run a hosted service. So it's simply a file on S3. It is designed to be almost trivial. Like you don't have to pay someone to host your CSS and your HTML. So how is that any different from apps? And that's exactly what PM Tiles is. So the core business of Protomaps cannot be SaaS. So what else is there? I've been working on this project for a couple of years, and I've been running some experiments just to see, you know, what kinds of other models there are. One thing that really caught my eye is a project called Tailwind. So Tailwind CSS is a component CSS framework. It is free and open source, and they also have a commercial offering called Tailwind UI, which is more full-fledged UI components using the open source framework. So for Protomaps, I have PM Tiles on the left as an open source ecosystem, and then I have the Protomaps base map based on OpenStreetMap, which is a commercial product, which is a proprietary product that is delivered in the PM Tiles format. And this is something that people often call open core. So in the middle, there is the totally open source, you know, kind of heart of the ecosystem. So Tailwinds is in the open core, and then there is a non-open source product outside of this, like Tailwind UI. Well, why don't we just have PM Tiles be in the open core, and then the base map be in the non-open source part? So this is more analogous to shrink wrapping. So shrink wrapping is a kind of legalese term for when you can just buy a piece of software wrapped in plastic at Staples, like you do with an operating system or you used to. And it is a flat fee, there's no subscription. It's not open source, there's some proprietary license, but it is like a one-time payment. So I literally built this. I mean, it is literally this page. You could go onto the Protomaps website, you could click a button, just use this Stripe. You could pay me $500 to download the base map, and this works. So open core is a viable model, and sort of there's this relationship between the open source stuff and the proprietary stuff. And I discovered through this, after testing this for a couple of months and having some early adopters, to kind of look for what are the drawbacks here and ultimately why I moved away from this. So the first drawback is adoption. So for Protomaps and PM Tiles, you need to change how people behave. Before, they would upload their data to a third-party service and just consume some API. But now you're actually changing their tools. And it's easy to get people interested, but it's hard to get people to adopt the whole thing. You have to, nothing is as easy to adopt as just another API. So I found it difficult to change the way that developers work in order to adopt this technology if there was some part of it that was proprietary. I guess, you know, bigger companies, they do things like have license servers or have watermarking, but I don't really have the resources to pull that off. Trust. If a company wants to adopt this software, they say, okay, there's this proprietary part of your thing that we want to adopt. But we can't modify it. And if you're like a solo developer, well, what happens? You know, like, we don't have a lot of confidence in something that's so new and is also proprietary. So I discovered through this that open source is part of the value proposition. By making things open source, that increases the trust for a small company that's trying to build something new. And the last reason is sort of, the ecosystem around open core introduces a lot of awkward conversations. People will be very excited about the open source part, and then you have to have a hard line between open source and the proprietary part. People will ask you, well, why isn't this thing open source? And I'll say, oh, because it's part of the proprietary thing. So there's like a lot of sort of subtle things where you have to spread yourself between working on open source and proprietary. So anyways, this year I mostly spent moving Protomaps from this open core model to a totally open source implementation. There is an OpenStreetMap data product that is open source, uses two awesome projects that I collaborated with on GitHub, that those are Tiles and Planetiler. So just to recap, because we're running out of time, a timeline of my work on this project. It was kind of born at the last Phosphor G in San Diego, kind of showing a proof of concept. And I decided at that time I wanted to work full-time on open source. In 2020, I created the legal entity. And I was developing the core software. In 2021 was the first version of PM Tiles, version, or at that time it was called version 2. In 2022, a company funded the new version of PM Tiles, the current version V3. I integrated it with tools like Tippecanoe. I started to sell the open core product and got my first customers. In 2023 was when I transitioned from open core to open source. I also have a sponsor supported SaaS tier. So I had not only got my first sponsor, I got my first 20 GitHub sponsors in order to pay for the SaaS. I also had some conference talks by other people about the technology, which is great. There was adoption. I onboarded my first major contributor. So I transitioned from a solo project to the lead developer of the project. I have a project budget now, and I can pay other people for freelance work. And I have a grant from a foundation. So thanks, Radiant Earth, for supporting the project. And in 2024 is a great time for your company to get involved in the project. It is not perfect. It is not done. It is free and open source. It needs a lot of documentation, but it is being used by more and more people. And I think it is worth, you know, a full-time investment. So if your company is using the tech or wants to learn more about it, you can find me at the conference or email me. Thanks.
Thanks, Brandon. Anyone have any questions for Brandon?
Yeah, so if you can pass the mic so I can hear the question, or to people with questions, I'm happy to answer like any questions about anything related to protomaps.
Yeah, just a blunt question, you don't have to answer, but is it a full-time income now?
Yes. I mean, so I wouldn't say it's super competitive, but it's something like overall, it enables me to work full time on it. Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit about the difference between PM tiles and just traditional Mapbox vector tiles and how Protomaps is so fast?
So I wouldn't say speed is a major differentiator. The question is the difference between Mapbox vector tiles and PM tiles. So in general, people who want to do vector tiles, they put the MVT vector tiles into PM tiles. So PM tiles is the analog of MB tiles. That's kind of why it's named that way. It's the same thing, just it removes SQLite as a dependency. So it's a container format for tile data. Like those individual tiles could be rasters, they could be vectors, they could be SVG or ZAR files. I would say that performance-wise, it really depends on how you measure performance, because in some cases it might be slower. I'd say like there's a lot of, usually for a web mapping system, there's a lot of things going on. There's like a client, there's latency to a storage system. I would say the general reason people adopt PM tiles is because of the static single file deployment with no server in between. And I would say latency is generally less of a major talking point than that accessibility. Yep.
Can you speak a bit about the future of protomaps and PM tiles, how you see it?
Right, so these are kind of like two projects, one built upon the other. So PM tiles is the file format in the ecosystem. Some of the things I want to do with PM tiles in the near future are doing like delta updates of PM tiles, so you don't need to download the whole thing at once. You can kind of like sync, like an rsync for PM tiles. And then a lot of my work now is going into the base map, which is a general purpose OpenStreetMap derived base map built and delivered as PM tiles under an open license. Most of my major work in the next year is making that customizable and making it multilingual. So right now it is sort of like English focused, and I want to make it support, you know, like global languages.
Hi, Brandon, over here on your left. How's it going? So for mobile applications, in the past, I've sideloaded MB tiles and just used the Mapbox SDK to go pull up the MB tiles from there. I want to do the same thing with PM tiles. The conversion I know is easy, but I don't know if it's easy to set up a server within Swift. And I wanted to see if you could comment on how easy it is to do something like that, where I know it's not a server, but I'm really just poking at that PM tiles that's on the local iPhone using Swift code. I know you've already written it in Go, but is it easy to port something over to Swift?
So I think like for mobile applications, the best would be some native way to read from the file system. Because if you're using like MapLibre, so MapLibre has some requested features. about like a custom data loading, like to be able to read files from disk. And I think like being able to eliminate like some sort of like local server would be really, would simplify the entire thing. So I'd say like, one sort of prerequisite is getting data loading into MapLibre on native. And if you have other renderers that are like open layers or other mobile renderers, I'm interested to hear about it. Yeah.
Okay, just quick follow-up. We could talk offline as well. I should mention, I don't necessarily want just MapLibre. I just want to go poke into the PM tiles and get the files I want out of it. So it'd be a non-MapLibre solution. But anyways, we could talk later.
Right. So the question was about not necessarily one specific renderer. You want a solution. So there is multiple implementations of the PM tiles reader. I think it probably takes like a day or two of work to write a basic implementation. There might be one for Swift already. I don't like, I only maintain Go, Python, C++, and JavaScript. I know there's other languages that are maintained by others. So there might already be one for Swift. Yeah.
All right, we have one more question.
Hi. So I've played with PM tiles locally, and I was using Tippecanoe to translate some MB tiles to PM tiles, and I know there's kind of a limitation in terms of the projections that can be translated. So like Web Mercator or Unprojected, I think were the only options there when I played around with it, or that's what I found. Do you foresee, you know, adding alternate projection support as the native stored format, the file, as scoped within the project? Or is that something you would do, you know, on a separate server on the client?
So the question was about, is there support for alternate projections in PM tiles? So PM tiles is unopinionated about projections. It only, it is defined as a pyramid where zoom zero is one tile. And now that's not compatible with all tiling schemes. If it's like quad key compatible, then it should work. So it's really like the projection is independent of the tiling scheme. Now there are some tiling schemes that don't fit, but there are ways to work around it. And I think the question of projections usually falls more on the renderer side, in that the underlying data might still be served as Web Mercator, for example, but the projection in the web browser, if you're using open layers, I know it has capabilities beyond that of just like MapLibre or Leaflet. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Brandon.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.